You are Locked On Brewers, your daily Milwaukee Brewers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hader ready again. Here it is. Swinging fly ball in the right center. Broxton is there. And they're the champions.
Some see what's brewing. Come see what the good times are.
Come see what the Brewers are doing. Come on and cheer a superstar.
And that one's deep. Right center. Christian Yelich has tied it. You are Locked On Brewers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm your host, Ben Larson. Find me on Twitter at Cheesehead Talks, also at Locked On Brewers, and Facebook.com/Locked On Brewers. The previous two were Twitter handles, if you didn't know that already. Anyway, Locked On Brewers is brought to you by Built Bar. Built Bar, a protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. Go to BuiltBar.com, use the promo code Locked On. You'll get 20% off your next order. We got a good one for you today. Kyle Loebner is going to join us. From shepherdsexpress.com, and it's a site that has some news, but more importantly, he writes about the Brewers for the Shepherd Express, and he'll talk with us about his observations. Always has a little bit of a different take, and we're going to get into it today with the more advanced StatCast numbers and StatCast technology, really, that allows even more focus on, you know, velocity, exit velocity, the spin rate, all that good stuff as far as all the numbers you hear about more and more, the percentage of balls that are barreled up and how it relates to the Brewers' season and maybe, you know, the expected numbers, the disappointing numbers, the surprising numbers, and, you know, what it means for, you know, the front office, David Stearns and company going forward for next season, what they can take from just a 60-game season with these advanced StatCast numbers. So I'm going to get into it and dive into it today. Of course, the World Series continues tonight as well, tied at one, and we can only hope for a 7-game series because just to entertain us a little bit. Although I did see a headline that the ratings are the lowest they've ever been, and they were lower for Game 2 than they were for Game 1, so people might not be too much into it, but in people's defense, there's a lot going on. There certainly is a lot going on these days to kind of pull your attention away from baseball and maybe even other sports. I don't know. But, I think so far it's been a interesting series, and you hope that it gets to, you know, as a person with no dog in the fight and someone who wants to kind of be entertained, I'm still a little torn. I might be kind of inching my way toward the Rays from the standpoint of I want to see the small market team win. And maybe that's kind of the team I'm on because of being a Brewers fan. I want to see a small market team get there like Kansas City did, but it's been few and far between, and I want to believe the Brewers can do it. So that's where I'm at. But either way, I hope for a really competitive, hard-fought series. And it gets interesting once you get past 2 and past Game 5. And the series is tight. That's what will be pretty interesting. Hopefully that will be the case. But they'll go at it tonight, and we'll see what the results are and talk about it, of course, next week on the podcast. But before we do that, we'll get to Kyle Loebner. Kyle Loebner of the Shepherd Express joins us next. You're Locked On Brewers. In the ever-increasing battle for you versus food, you always look for a snack that is going to help you and not hurt you. You know, help you feel better, feel fuller, and not taste like crap. Well, Built Bar is here. 18 amazing flavors, including nut and non-nut flavors. They've got 6 new ones to go along with their 12 original flavors. They're healthy. Built Bar is a great fit for the health-conscious guy. Lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat. Bars are low-calorie, low-sugar, high-protein, high-fiber. Great for the keto diet. So check them out. Go to BuiltBar.com. Use promo code LOCKEDON. You'll get 20% off your next order. Promo code LOCKEDON for 20% off at BuiltBar.com. Kyle Loebner writes for Shepherd's Express. The Shepherd Express had been around a long time and does a great job. As I've said, kind of taking a different angle or two about the Brewers every time he writes an article, and he joins us here on Locked On Brewers to talk about a couple of previous articles in recent days here that he's written. Kyle, thanks for the time. I wanted to talk about just something I wasn't totally aware of, and that's that the technology, and I guess if you think about it, just sort of moves forward and forward each passing year. And the way that the baseball and the StatCast system can continue to get better at measuring closer and closer the action on a baseball field, even improved here in 2020, and they had their state-of-the-art tracking technology even further this year. So let's start with there. What is your impression on how that has changed and how maybe it has affected things, here in 2020 and moving forward?
It's really incredible how much things have changed just in recent years. And I experienced it a fair amount at the minor league level in my work with the Wisconsin Timber Rattlers, seeing some of the technology that's in the clubhouse that wasn't there when I started 5 years ago, some of the things that we're looking at now, some of the things that we know now that we never knew before. It's changed almost every aspect of player development because, for a very long time, baseball was really built around looking at the outputs. How often does a guy get a hit? How often does he get on base? And what we know is that the smaller of a sample size you have, the more those numbers vary based on factors that really aren't talent driven. A guy who hits a ground ball that gets through didn't hit the ball any harder than a guy who hit a ground ball that got fielded. While it takes a big sample size to really evaluate a player's, at the very least, skills based on outputs, you can pretty quickly get numbers that stabilize based on inputs. Once you know how fast a guy is, you can more or less assume that he's going to be, within some small margin of that number, barring injury or some other concern, pretty indefinitely. And you can see things like, how quickly a guy reacts to a ball off the bat. You can certainly see things in pitchers like spin rate that we, have come a long way in measuring in the last few years. And so I think those numbers, maybe not those numbers specifically, but the StatCast numbers are going to be increasingly important this winter for teams because they're going to have to ask themselves the question. We saw a guy this year for 35 or 40 games. We saw him take 150 at-bats. We saw him pitch 30 innings. What do the numbers mean? And I think the outputs largely can be attributed to small sample size, but the inputs stabilize relatively quickly. And so they're going to know at least to some extent what they're getting with some of these guys just based on, kind of the raw numbers for their skills and abilities.
Well, that's interesting because that's a question I've had on my mind, really the entire season ever since this whole COVID thing started taking place. And that is, how do you evaluate this season? And maybe we have an answer here with just advanced StatCast numbers. And so let's dive into it a little bit. One popular number in the analytic world is exit velocity, and you had this. I guess it's kind of funny because it's both surprising and not surprising given the season that Christian Yelich had, that he led the Brewers in exit velocity at an average of 94 miles per hour. So you kind of had that listed as you ranked sort of some of these categories in this article. You had it listed as the facts, which he was the leader, and also the surprise because he hit 205 this year and had such a down year compared to what he had in 2018 and 2019. And yet, a lot of his stats were still very Christian Yelich-like, weren't they?
Yeah, I've written, I think, three times since the end of the year now about Christian Yelich. I think I could do a weekly Christian Yelich piece all the way to spring because there's so much to cover from his 2020 season. Because the fact remains, and the point I was trying to make by including him as both the leader and the surprise, is that, when you look at his outputs or his inputs from this year, you still see a guy who hits the ball very hard. You still see a guy who hits the ball like an elite hitter. Now, there's a variety of other factors that went into his season, and the one I think we're going to hear attributed a lot is bad luck. But when he was able to put the ball in play this year, he was able to do it with a good deal of authority, and I think there's reason for optimism based on that as you look ahead, that skill is a thing that carried over even into a really rough year for him. And hopefully he's in a position to continue to harness that next year. Now there are other questions about Yelich. Later on in the piece, we talk about pitch selection. And Yelich was really, really weak this year, both in terms of decisions to swing or not swing, and in terms of making good contact with pitches around the edge of the zone. He was still able to hit the ball with authority kind of over the heart of the plate, but pitches around the outside of the plate, he tended to, make poor decisions on either taking or swinging and then didn't tend to hit with authority when he did. And there's a big lineup protection question also. And that when you look at some of the previous years he's had guys like Mike Moustakas sitting behind him. And when you look at the 2020 Brewers, with all due respect to Jed Jerko, who had a better year, I think, than almost anybody predicted, Jed Jerko doesn't belong in that class.
Yeah, no, no question about it. And so lots of other reasons, as you mentioned, for Yelich's struggles. And you know, we will focus on what the Brewers will do with some of these guys who disappointed. One of them who, you know, just by the end of the year was lost, well, really the whole year, but the Brewers just had to stop playing him, was Omar Narvaez. And no surprise that as it relates to exit velocity and probably a lot of other numbers, he's at the bottom. I mean, he's just 81.6 miles per hour. He just could not get it together this year. And you'd have to – that's where you wonder, right? What do they do with him, and will he get it together? Because he has in the past.
Yeah, it's – you know, you could have given me a lot of opportunities to predict what Omar Narvaez's 2020 season would look like before I would have given you this option. Because the Brewers brought in Narvaez, I think, with some confidence that he was going to hit and hit with some authority. The question was whether he would be good enough defensively behind the plate to play most days, because that had been the weakness for him in the past. And the Brewers were able to do something that no other team had been able to do to this point, which is make him a pretty good to, you know, serviceable at least MLB catcher. Who just looked absolutely lost at the plate all season and just never really put it together in any meaningful way. Now, the question we'll have for Narvaez indefinitely is what he could have done over the course of a full season. If we would have seen these numbers turn around, if somebody could have eventually gotten through to him and found a way to tinker with his approach and get him back to being the hitter he had been previously. But yeah, there's... on a season where there were some Brewers who were very disappointing, Narvaez has to be very close to the top of that list. And it's going to be, it's really difficult to picture an environment this winter where the Brewers make the decision to offer him arbitration and give him a nominal raise in a situation where, you know, their budget probably is a little bit limited.
Yeah, that will be a fascinating decision, no question about it. Talking with Kyle Loebner from the Shepherd's Express here, Shepherd Express, excuse me. Let's talk a little bit about just Evisel Garcia, because here's another guy who, of course, they signed to a free agent deal. And I think most fans would say he disappointed, and yet, you know, is from not only an at bat or excuse me, an offensive perspective, but also maybe a defensive perspective. One of the interesting things you brought up in this article was that he was asked to play center field, which very little time in center field in his career leading up to this. And yet he covered some ground. He was respectable, and he has a lot of speed for a guy his size, which, again, you don't see coming, but there it is. And all in all, I mean, you know, he's going to be a Brewer here. He signed a three-year deal, and they put too much money into him to not be a Brewer, barring a trade, of course. What do you think is ahead for Evisel Garcia as a Brewer?
You know, I think there's a solid argument to be made that Garcia has an opportunity to be a great bounce-back candidate in 2021. And you mentioned the big factor that I think played into his season a lot this year, which is that the Brewers really needed him to play center, which is just such a physically demanding position. And one of the biggest surprises of the season for me was the fact that he was able to do it reasonably well, really kind of on an average level, despite the fact that he really doesn't look like a guy who should be able to do that. A scout years ago told me about a player who seemed out of scale for a position. They look like a battleship out there. You know, that the maneuverability just doesn't look like it should be there. And Garcia kind of looks like that out in center field, but he gets the job done. The challenge with him playing center field all the time is that that is one of the most physically demanding positions on the diamond. There's very rarely a play where a center fielder holds still. And so, you know, when you see him running all over the place out there and making plays that you wouldn't expect him to be able to make and really taxing his body out there, I think you eventually saw that come through at the plate. This is just a guy who was on tired legs for a lot of the year. And the Brewers basically acknowledged that there were days where they sat him just because, you know, physically he had taken the season had taken a real toll on him. Mm-hmm. And so if the Brewers are able to get back to a spot next spring where Lorenzo Cain is playing most days in center field, or even somebody else is playing most days in center field, I think that really gives Garcia an opportunity to get back to, you know, maybe playing 4 or 5 days a week, maybe playing, you know, much more frequently in a corner or DHing a little more. And I think that extra rest and that lack of wear and tear is going to open him up to have a real nice year offensively. and be much closer to the player I think the Brewers and fans thought they were getting when they signed him.
Yeah, that'd be great to see. And, you know, the last thing I wanted to touch on before we move on to another article of yours here was the barrels per plate appearance for pitchers. I thought this was really interesting. Now, it's among 11 qualifiers on the Brewers who faced at least 75 batters. But the leader is not a surprise, Devin Williams. Just 2.2% of batters barreled him up. Josh Hader, though, at 6.4%, which just the Hader thing is interesting because, you know, there's going to be a lot of talk for however long he stays in Milwaukee about being a trade candidate. And there's a lot of debate as to whether or not we've seen the best of Josh Hader. So what are your thoughts on that, given this stat that he, kind of lagged behind with 6.4% of barrels per plate appearance?
Well, it's the denominator on that one is actually balls in play. And that's the challenge with Hader, is that when you look at the number of balls put in play against him this season, it's a really low number. So one of the caveats I put on that specific item in the article is that, you know, the sample size here is an issue when you're trying to evaluate a player, especially a player like Hader, who had, you know, basically enough balls put in play this year to count on your fingers and toes, as a guy who mostly gets strikeouts and walks. And so, you know, it's going to be a challenge. Anytime you start to get a closer who gets hit hard, even a little bit, you know, because they're out there on the tightrope so often, it very quickly becomes a PR problem. Yeah. Because it's not necessarily that the guy is ineffective. It's that that guy is in a position where the team is going to win or lose because of his effort. And it's frustrating when they lose. Especially in a situation like that, where they've led for 8.5 innings and all of a sudden come in and give up that home run. And so because of that, the shelf life of closers is, you know, really short across baseball. I think there is, generally speaking, at least for a long time, there was a push from some of the smarter teams to kind of deal early on closers, and to deal them to some of the teams that I think were a little bit behind the times analytically and more likely to overpay for a quote-unquote proven closer. As time has gone by, that latter group of teams, those old-school GMs that still think that that ninth-inning save number is a big-time relevant statistic, has really dwindled. And so it's harder and harder to get market value for a guy who is a reliever, understanding that that position carries a lot of wear and tear, understanding that the shelf life of that position is pretty short. And Hader is a guy who really seems, you know, pretty happy in Milwaukee. One of his big meltdowns this year happened. In fact, the biggest one happened right after the rumor started to come out that he may be traded.
Yeah.
And so I think for teams that are out there that are considering buying on Hader, they have to consider the possibility that once you remove him from Milwaukee, you take away one of the big things that's made him successful. And so I don't know that the market for Hader is as big as I think a lot of folks tend to think it is. I'm sure the Brewers are listening to offers. I'm sure they're listening to offers on just about everybody, especially as you talk about some of the guys, especially in that bullpen, that are due big raises in arbitration either soon or eventually. But I think the odds of getting a really great package back for a reliever just aren't as good as they used to be.
Again, you can find Kyle Loebner's writings at shepherdexpress.com. Always a good spin, a good angle on what's going on with the Brewers. That's why we appreciate having him on the podcast. It's I think it's really interesting to talk to him because he's always got something interesting to say and thought-provoking. So that's the case there. We will talk to Kyle again next week. I actually had a two-part interview here, so I'll have the second part on next week talking about the Brewers' 2020 roster makeup and what's going to change for the Brewers and how much do they rely on this particular season, the 60 games plus the advanced StatCast technology plus just knowing what you need to know, and then you factor in everything else with the way the offseason is going to play out. No one knows how this offseason is going to play out. There's a lot of theories, there's a lot of conversation about it. Maybe we'll have a better idea here after the World Series. Maybe by the time December rolls around, you have a really good feel for it. Maybe not. I don't know. Could we see a ton of free agents at a bargain value because teams are, you know, have no money and they're worried about COVID? Could we see big spending by the large market teams and the small market teams get left out? Could there be a bigger discrepancy between the have and have nots this year because of the situation that the, you know, haves have more money and they'll spend it. The have nots have even less and they won't. You know, we just have to see how this is all going to happen. And it makes you a little nervous, I think. It makes me a little nervous as a Brewer fan just to see what they're going to do and what their strategy is heading into this, you know, pretty turbulent offseason. So we'll pick up that conversation with Kyle next week on the podcast. Dr. Scott will also join us to talk about Omar Narvaez and his prospects with the Brewers and how much you can judge, again, on his particular season, what they do with him. Because he was such a terrible offensive player this season, but his career would suggest that he will rebound. And so what do you do? What do you do with Narvaez? We'll talk with Dr. Scott about that coming up next week as well. So it should be interesting. As always, really enjoy the conversations with all these guys, and we'll have more of them, of course, through this long and somewhat turbulent offseason. That's what we're predicting. Somewhat turbulent. So we'll talk about it next week. Looking forward to it. In the meantime, have a great weekend. Enjoy the World Series games 3, 4, and 5 here over the weekend. And hopefully we're talking about a 3-2 series one way or the other coming into next week. That'd be enjoyable. I just root for the competitive series. You can find me on Twitter at CheeseheadTalks, also at Lockdown Brewers, and Facebook.com/LockdownBrewers. I'm Ben Larson. Talk to you next week when we deliver your fix of Brewers baseball talk right here on Lockdown Brewers, part of the Lockdown Podcast Network.